right, well, today we're studying the Beatitudes. Matthew chapter 5. And I don't know if you're like me in reading them, you always learn something new, something maybe you didn't think about, but are there life-changing events that change your priorities? Do we always want to change? Are we hesitant to change? But starting out, and this. Remember when Moses went up on the mountain to meet with God to receive the Ten Commandments? Well, it's chapter 5 starts out when Jesus, and it says, now when he, meaning Jesus, saw the crowds, he went up on a mountainside and sat down. And his disciples came to him, and Jesus began to teach them. Now, if you think about Jesus and his time here and his works and everything, how often or do you ever think he got tired of teaching to the masses? Do you think it? I've often wondered if, in his travels, if he just got tired of all of a sudden a big crowd showing up and expecting me to teach them. Yeah. But just reading these verses, I never really paid attention, never thought about it, or didn't know that the Beatitudes, there's like two different groups. This writer says that the first four, and we'll read them, describes the Christian's attitude towards God, and the second will portray the Christian attitude toward other people. So if we read verses 3 through 6, it says, blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are those who mourn, for they will be comforted. Blessed are the meek, for they will inherit the earth. And blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they will be filled. Now, the word blessed, and this writer kind of compares it to the meaning, blessed would just mean congratulations. But when you read and look into the words, does it, when it says blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Now, do you interpret that to mean, well, he's saying that those who are lacking in the spirit, are lacking in the knowledge, theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Well, what about someone who is overblessed in the spirit or has more knowledge than another? Are you left out? But kind of what it's the writer or the, what I read is telling us, I think we all have to be aware, and I'll use these words that he uses, is our own spiritual bankruptcy. You know, do we sometimes just, we have it, and we know it, and we live it, but then like money, we let it go away until we don't have it anymore, and we become bankrupt. But does that mean that our place in heaven is ever diminished? It's always there. Because, I guess some people maybe really don't understand, really what was Jesus' purpose when he came here on earth. Would you think that, and we probably discussed this before, well, he's God's son, He don't have to do anything. You know, he's got it all. His father is control of everything. So why should he go out and walk the roads and go from city to city and travel and do what he's doing? But
that was on his heart.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other thing, people were so, I guess they were skeptical about, was he really going to be crucified? Was he really going to do what was prophesied in the Old Testament? Was he really going to save me? So I guess this was his way of being obedient and doing what he was placed here to do. Even among, because you said the crowd followed him, but how many of them in the crowd were skeptics? How many in the crowd came to believe, came to hear him to believe, or did they come to hear him to criticize and make fun of him, or
see what's going on?
Yes,
I'm sure there were those.
Those people that came, how many were really touched by what he did, and how many were there? You know, it finally happened. I mean, this is what.
Mm-hmm. But we know God's plan is he freely offers his salvation. And I guess you can say that Jesus was here to establish that in your life. He was there to share that with you. But then verse 4 says, blessed are those who mourn, for they will be comforted. Well, wouldn't you take that just to be a common thing? If, you know, mourning, are you in that state because of death, sickness, some life-changing event? So wouldn't you expect other people to feel sorry, not feel sorry for you, but to feel what you're feeling or maybe know what you're going through and want to come and offer a kind word or to help you in the time of mourning. But when he says the mourners will be comforted, this writer has a question, how? It says, God's forgiveness prepares believers to deal with sin's damage and move past it. It says, the assurance of God's healing through salvation brings a settled comfort in the soul.
Well, don't you think as Christians we are more comforted than non-Christians when we mourn? Don't you think we have a different kind of peace?
Well, you have a different thought pattern.
Yeah, that's true. The thought pattern.
But like the writer points out, being a Christian and being in his word, and like you said, are you more prepared to deal with it than somebody that has never experienced his touch? Or never.
Said, how in the world do you lose somebody? How do you face all of this without it? Mm-hmm. I mean, see people out there that don't know the Lord and they have to go through all this stuff. I don't know how they survive it because it's hard enough with it.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
And then, I know this has been discussed before and I guess it just came to me, is a pastor who's called upon to preach somebody's funeral that they've never met. Is God placing them in the presence of that family to, number one, maybe give them a glimpse of the Word, to share that with them, and hopefully maybe to change lives that are present and move on? Does he use pastors like that to comfort those who are mourning? But then, blessed are the meek, for they will inherit the earth. Do you take it that he's saying that, for me to gain anything, I have to walk around all my life and not say a word. I just have to have a gentle spirit and be calm. Never, and just make other people, you know, I just kind of, I'm in the background. Is that what it's telling us? Because can you say, well, I know of a person who confesses to be a Christian and every time I'm around them, they're always starting an argument or picking a fight with someone. So where do you balance that at? Are we as Christians supposed to be silent in times like that? Right. But, or is it telling us that there are people who are going to use their influence over other people to gain what they're looking for? You know, that this is kind of an area that in life, you know, when something arises like that, and maybe this part of you wants to bow up and express your feelings, but the other side is saying, mm-mm. You know, how do we handle that? Is it showing weakness when you don't express yourself or give your ideas? Or what, you know, what would the world be, or what, let's say in church life, what would it be if everybody just sat there and just agreed, just went along with everything that went along?
We wish to be that way sometimes.
But sometimes it can't always be that way. I think God gives some folks the ability to speak and to say what needs to be said.
Yeah. Because this writer kind of, he says, a gentle person acknowledges weakness, but he places his trust in God to help him overcome it. Because he goes on to say that the gentle or the meek are rooted so firmly in a dependence on God that they do not need to exert defensive behavior or pick fights with people in advance to advance their own agenda. That's, I guess, the synopsis there is, we're here, we've got one agenda, and that's to serve the Lord and live our lives for Him.
But we've all been in circumstances, I think, where someone who never gives their opinion is very meek, very loving, you know, and lives this. When they finally do speak, people listen, mm-hmm. and it has an impact on their life or the situation, whether it be in your family, in your church, you know, where sometimes it just takes somebody that's so very meek to finally have it laid on their heart to say something, that it does make a difference. It makes, maybe sometimes it makes the right difference. Does that mm-hmm. make sense?
True.
Most of the time, you really have to have someone that's like that to be a leader.
They just seem to be
more
grounded.
Ways than one.
They're
uh-huh.
grounded in their faith and uh-huh. their beliefs and their understanding of the Word. So when they finally do exert what they, or say what they needed to say in an action, then it makes the difference.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
And by showing that, can that influence other people to follow that person and try to take on their characteristic and pass it along to other people behind them? But verse 6 says, blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they will be filled. You can take the two words out of that, hunger and thirst. I mean, anybody not eat breakfast this morning? Anybody not drink anything this morning? So what happens, and I think maybe sometimes you can say, well, we overindulge in it, but if you don't eat and you don't drink, you're going to get hungry, you're going to get thirsty, and then you'll get sick. But as Christians, do you desire the righteousness of God in your life?
Yeah. You desire this learning, what we're doing right now.
Mm-hmm.
Desire this teaching.
If you get away from it, or in your life, if you've ever moved away from the study of the Word or God's Word, did you have a hunger? Did you have something inside saying, feed me, help me, bring me back?
It's that wooing of that Holy Spirit that's pulling you back.
Is your life filled with the Word all the time? Or is there, or you sometimes feel like you're missing a portion? Because if you think about life circumstances, can circumstances make you feel unfilled?
I think we all have pity parties. Why me? Why the next person has this? Why don't I have this? Why am I sick? Why did I lose my job? I think we all subconsciously do that, even if you never express it to anybody. Nobody knows what you're feeling except yourself. You don't have to take, but I think we all do that in different situations. I mean, you know, everybody has that. Why?
All right. If you take that thought, and if you think about your attitude towards God, and you go back over these past four verses, should you ever feel that way?
Well, no, but I'm human. He made us all. He made us human in His image. So it start like you started out the first of the lesson. Did He get tired of all them people hanging on Him? I mean, you think about it. Did He ever just want to say, go away?
Yeah.
Just let me be by myself. Let me be one-on-one with my Father and not have to deal with all these,
there's mentioned there are times when He did go away by Himself and to the mountains and pray. And I've often wondered,
had He had enough and He needed that
some
down
space.
Mm-hmm. I mean, we all do that.
Well, that's just like in a marriage with you and Oliver. Every once in a while, you got to get away from each other.
I'd tell her that. Talking about your relationship with Christ, starting in verse 7, it says, blessed are the merciful, for they will be shown mercy. Can you say that mercy is active? Or does it do more than just feeling sorry for someone? Is there a difference in having mercy on someone than feeling sorry for somebody?
Well, somewhere along the line, I don't know, I'm sure that we've been preached a bunch of times, but I have written, God treats us like we treat others.
Mm-hmm. Why would you expect any different?
So, the mercy and the merciful.
Because he has a statement. He's promising mercy to the merciful. And he says that our willingness to show mercy on others brings an openness to receive mercy from God. It says the outcome of God's forgiveness should be that we become forgivers. And it's because it says God replenishes any mercy we offer to others. I mean, I'm sure I'm guilty like everyone, but how many times do you say, well, I really don't need to show this person anything because of how they act and their lifestyle and different things they do? I really shouldn't feel sorry for them, or I shouldn't go to them and try to comfort them or offer any word of advice.
I had that situation yesterday at Walmart. There was an old beat-up van there, and there was this guy standing there. It was not a bad-looking guy. It was not dirty. Did not look real scruffy like you see so many of them. And he had a sign up, and he said, "I'm a vet. I just need gas money."
Oh.
And I went on past. And all the way home, I thought, I need to go back. And I didn't. And because I felt like I should have gone back, I should have.
Yeah.
Just, and normally I can go past those and it never bothers me. But why that one bothered me yesterday, I don't know. And because it bothered me, I think I was wrong not to go back. I could have handed the man a $5 bill. I mean, it wouldn't have made him or broken me. It certainly wouldn't have killed me. And it would have eased my conscience. And I dealt with it all that time. That's just, normally I pass them by and I don't pay them any attention. I'm so used to seeing
them. Yeah.
I'm so used to. Something about that one that touched me, and I don't know why.
Sometimes we're guilty of, why should I be nice to somebody because they probably wouldn't be nice to me.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, that's the way of the world.
Yeah.
Right? So if you held up the same would somebody have been nice to you? And you know,
I go back.
We don't ever know what caused that person to be in that condition.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I had a brother died, he said, my brother was in Vietnam. Mm-hmm. A lot of people talked about him, but he never could face people like he came out of Vietnam and lived like a hermit. Didn't have nothing to do with the family or nobody. But people talked about him, but they didn't know the circumstances.
Mm-hmm. I always go back to a past preacher we had. He made a statement one time that he always felt like if there was somebody there asking for something, how does he know that that's not an angel from God testing him? And he would, but he's also said in a situation like that is he would just tell that person, well, why don't pull your car up here and I'll put $5 in your tank. And if they say, well, they hesitate, then there's your answer, you know. But verse 8, it says, blessed are the pure in heart, for they will see God. Can you be hard-hearted and cold-hearted all your life and expect God's reward for you? Or do you... The purity of your heart is going to show your relationship to God. Because do you think God would rather fellowship if we split the room today and one side was pure in heart, obedient, and the other side were just cold as ice, didn't care, all I thought about was myself? If Jesus walked in the room, which side do you think he would lean more to want to have a relationship with?
The cold side, because we are the ones who need it. Mm-hmm. This side would need it more than... He would minister, listen, he would minister to this side, I think.
Do you think he would want to fellowship with that side more so than those who really know his teaching?
I think he would want us to be weaved together. He would work this side. It's kind of like an entertainer. You would work this side, and then you would work that side. But in the end, they would have meshed.
He would minister more to the ones that were open to him.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And hoping that the others would hear and move across.
When it was over, we would all be on the same page.
Because in the old days, if you think about the rulers, the kings, did they involve themselves with the common people? It was me, and my servants, and I got done what I wanted done through them. And I really didn't care about anybody else. But if I expected you to work and plant the fields for crops for me to eat, I expected you to do that. But Jesus involves himself or God with everybody, no matter where you're at. It says, blessed are the peacemakers, for they will be called sons of God. Can it be risky to be a peacemaker? If you're trying to avoid, or if there's conflict and you try to get in the middle of it to appease it or try to resolve it, is that wrong? Or is that showing your relationship with Christ? You're trying to bring the other two sides together for a workable solution. Because I never thought about this, is when Jesus was on the cross, was that the best example we could have had of a peacemaker? I mean, would you have been willing to do that, sacrifice yourself? Or would you have been willing to sacrifice your child in that manner? But think about what he went through before he got nailed on the cross. Would you have been able to take all the punishment and all the criticism and all the back-talking that he took? You know, this, the world we live in today, I read something the other day, is Christians, the Christian life that we have experienced in the past is not the same today. Because we're going to be criticized more. We're going to be scorned more. And taking that is, how are we going to react if somebody does that to you?
Well, look at the people over there that are being beheaded over there. They're Christian beliefs. Mm-hmm. You know, we don't have a clue. We don't know anything about anything like that.
No.
We don't. What little black we get is nothing.
And I hate to think it, but what if that evolved in our world here to where you were not comfortable walking the streets because someone like that, you're a Christian, and because of your beliefs, that happens.
Just like at one of those schools or something, didn't the guy go around saying, mm-hmm. are you a Christian or not? And he would shoot him.
Shoot him.
I forgot where that was.
One of those students.
Yeah, you know, you hope you would be brave enough to, you know, acknowledge that, but... You know, you just wonder
sometimes when the guns running, you know, you hope you'd be strong. Mm-hmm. Like so many of them were, you know. And those beheading, I mean, I don't know. And if I saw that, I asked myself that question. You didn't get no hands. I sure did. I didn't get no hands either.
But is there any higher commendation that you could receive than to be called a child of God and to have all its rights and privileges? And then verses 10 and 11, where it says, blessed are those who are persecuted because of righteousness, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are you when people insult you, persecute you, and falsely say all kinds of evil against you because of me. So, what happens if somebody does say something about your relationship with the Lord and they insult you? How do you react? Or do you take those last few words and do you get mad and say, well, it's all because of you?
We should count it all as joy.
Yeah, we should. Because I think this is where I got this from. It's this writer points out that the last two verses, and leaving verse 12, it says, "Rejoice and be glad, because great is your reward in heaven, for in the same way they persecuted the prophets who were before you." And he makes a statement, is that Christ-like people will attract insult and criticism. And as a believer, he says, you can expect that some people will falsely say every kind of evil against you. Jesus got that same kind of treatment when he was accused and falsely accused of taking orders from Satan. And this is a statement that kind of got me. It says, we get what Jesus got when we seek to be like him. This is right here. But moving from the Beatitudes, and I'll ask this question, is have you ever been around anyone who in their lifetime had to preserve their meat with salt?
We need you coming up.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And, I mean, you can relate, like, today's it's refrigerated. And you freeze it and you thaw it out and you cook it and you eat it. But in those days you had to prepare it in salt.
Salt, put it in the smokehouse and kept it
out. Mm-hmm.
Hang it up and hang on some ribs and things.
But what happens if you do that and then when you go to serve that food, you didn't take it away?
Didn't take
the salt away.
Oh. You didn't soak it and get the salt.
Oh,
away.
Oh,
and then it tasted
it. Nasty. Nasty, because we can relate to that. Susan's sister one Christmas brought this ham, and she forgot to soak it, and she cooked it, and nobody could eat it. Not even the dogs.
Well, and the good thing, they didn't know that has a bacteria in it when you do not cure a ham or something like that. Because this friend of ours, Johnny Gardner, and them, they bought a fresh ham for Christmas, and they didn't know that you had to use that stuff, and they couldn't find any here in town. So they had to order off the internet. And it said if you don't use it, it'll have a bacteria to it.
It was horrible. Spent all this money on this ham somewhere up in Tennessee.
But if you're the salt of the earth and you're here to preserve his word and you lose your effectiveness, it becomes contaminated. It loses its flavor. It loses its taste. And when he talks about the light of the world, is that visible light that we have here? Or is it your life and how you show yourself to other people that lets people know that you're following? Mm-hmm. And then the last couple of verses, 15 and 16, it says, "Neither do people light a lamp and put it under a bowl. Instead, they put it on its stand and it gives light to everyone in the house." And verse 16, it says, "In the same way, let your light shine before men, that they may see your good deeds and praise your Father in heaven." Or as I've got a word written, "You glorify your Father in heaven." So can you say that good works are actions that shine? Without good works, would you show anyone else that what you say is true?
No,
if you walked around,
do something about it.
But you know, sometimes it's hard to say what is right or do what is right because of the criticism that comes behind it.
Well, you go back.
That's true. But
and it says, because of that, you will be criticized.
That's right.
So
it's sometimes it is hard. You get tired of being criticized.
So do you?
We've all been there. It's easier to compliment somebody than it is to criticize. I mean, it's easy to take a compliment over criticism. And even as Christians, sometimes in your heart, you just get to the point, I've had enough. You know, I've been criticized enough from what, where I am.
Say this lightly, do we turn our light on and off? I want it on when I want it to be on, and when I don't, I'll turn it off.
Depends
and so
on the circumstances is what we do.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, but we're human also, and we also know that we have a God that forgives us for the things that we do.
Yeah. And you don't have to answer. Which beatitude would you say is the most difficult to accept?
Probably for me, probably mine, because I have written in my Bible, which is blessed are the peacemakers, and I have not written, we'll be Christ-like. We'll be like Christ.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, there's, that's the, those are what we choose to feel. We strive every day to be Christ-like.
Well, I don't know one which one would feed it. Wouldn't mind would be keeping my mouth shut. I don't know what number that is. But I can't help it, but when I think something, it just jumps out. Well, let's stand and have our benediction, and we'll be through. Let the words of my mouth and the meditation of my heart be acceptable in thy sight, O Lord, my strength and my redeemer.